Howdy all, this is Shane. Welcome to the In the Blues Tone podcast. Today we're going to be talking with Paul from DIY Guitar Pedals, and his website is diyguitarpedals.com.au. He's also got a really cool YouTube channel called Chromesphere that I've learned so much from in building my own pedals. Paul is a bit of a guru when it comes to making his own effects pedals, helping others, and also providing a really cool shop where people can buy parts, which is where I get a lot of mine from. So we're going to have a chat to Paul shortly and have a chat about the ins and outs of DIY pedal building, and it should be a lot of fun. All right, so welcome to the In the Blues Tone podcast, Paul. Thanks for being one of the very few guests I've had.
Thanks for having me.
No worries, I appreciate your time. So you're a bit of you're my sort of like mentor when it comes to guitar pedal building now. You've helped me out on a number of occasions, so thank you so much for all your help. I just wanted to throw that in there. And you've got a great YouTube channel that pretty much covers lots of topics for people wanting to get into DIY pedals and, you know, where to start and all that kind of stuff. And that just brings me to I guess the first question I have is, if you were starting from scratch again, what would be the steps that you would take, I guess, to learn a little bit about how to make pedals and just where to start in general?
I would definitely I'd definitely start with something as simple as possible. It sounds a bit funny, but the effect is only half the thing that you have to learn to build. You know, like you got to put it inside an enclosure and you got to wire it up and all that sort of stuff. And that's something that you need to learn to do. So if you use a simple effect, getting a simple effect going is easy. So you can get the effect going, and then you can focus on how to wire it up inside the enclosure, because building the effect there's a lot to learn besides just building the actual effect. And if you go with something like an 8-step phaser or something like that, something complicated, it's gonna fail. And I mean, I just talk from personal experience, but if I take on a new hobby and I take on something complicated and inevitably fail, I just can't. It turns me off the hobby. So the best advice I could probably give is to start simple.
Yeah, and I actually did exactly what you're talking about. I started with something that I was given to do a bit of a demo and a video on, but it was way over my head. I didn't know how to solder properly. I didn't have the proper tools, which makes a huge difference. Just even the wire strippers. Like, I got a set of those the other week, and, well, life's a lot easier now than trying to use the pliers that I had, you know. It's definitely, there's a lot to learn in terms of, how it all fits together, how to solder properly, making, and as you've helped me with troubleshooting and not trying to go too deep too soon. You know, I built my first one, I was like, oh, this is going to be easy, and then I failed the next few that were way too complicated. So
yeah,
it's good. You seem to have quite a lot of basic kits, which they've all worked out fine so far for me.
that's exactly what they're meant for. That's their exact purpose, and it's probably a reason why they're relatively popular, because I mean, I have people ask me all the time, look, I want to start a project. What should I start? I say, look, just go for one of the simple, you know, like the 10-minute dirt and boost, or the 10-minute buffer, or the 7-minute fuzz, because they're just so easy to put together. It's ridiculous. You just can't. It's like the 7-minute fuzz has got 5 components on it.
Yeah, it's great.
You've only got a very small amount of solder joints that you have to get right. See, that's the other thing too, with the complicated effect. You've just got an ocean of solder points, and the more solder points you have, the more room for error there is. So, you know, that's why it's important to go for something simple, small, you know, like those kits that I have. And then they build it and they come back and they say, I got it working. It was great. You know, and I also have people say, I tried, like I said before, I tried something more complicated and it just failed. And, you know, but now I've tried yours and it's working again. It's giving me the confidence to go into something that's a little bit harder, and that's what you got to do. You got to start. I reckon you got to start with the simple stuff and work your way up. I mean, I didn't tackle the first advanced build I tackled was small stone, which it nearly killed me, that thing, because I just had so many problems with it. But that was number 12, you know, so yeah, that was my 12th build. Yeah, so if you try that at the start, you just
I've put my two failed Maxon pedals, aside, the Maxon sort of clones, aside for about another, I'll look at them again in about another 6 months once I've done a few more easy ones, and then I'll probably, a light bulb will go off and I'll go, oh, that's where I made a mistake. Because I guess the problem, not the problem, but part of the issue, I think, for me starting fresh was like knowing how to take, read the values of the resistors and all that kind of stuff, you know, and they look so similar that it's really easy to make a mistake, I think, even if you think you know which one's which, it's quite easy to make those mistakes there.
Yeah, and like we spoke about the other day, you can act, some of the resistors you can read both ways, you know, so which just makes it a little bit more confusing. But I'd recommend for even if you're just going to build a couple of pedals, you go, if you have a plan, I'm going to build a few pedals.
Yep.
I'd recommend just getting the cheapest multimeter that you can find, just so you can confirm that those values are right, because you know, I mean, if you put the wrong value in, you just don't know what's going to happen with the circuit, you know, if you've stuffed up the values. So it's important to get them in right. So I just buy the cheapest multimeter that you can get, I reckon, if you, you know, for people who are starting out.
Yeah, cool. Are there any other tools that people might overlook when they first start to do this? Say they've got a, you know, they might not even have a wire stripper, but just a pair of pliers and a soldering iron. What else would you recommend that people have to make, just to make life easier when they're starting out?
You don't really need that much. Like that's the thing. Like, if you don't have any electronic stuff, you're gonna have to spend a bit of money. Obviously, I mean, you need a soldering iron. You can't build a pedal without soldering iron.
Yeah.
You know, and solder, of course. And the list is actually really basic. I've actually got a video in my upload queue about a minimalist tool set is what it's called. So the absolute minimum that you need. You don't even need a drill, because, like, as you probably know, you can buy the enclosures pre-drilled, pre-painted as well. You don't even need to paint them.
I bought a drill and all that before I found that out.
Yeah. I mean, you pay a little bit extra because, I mean, you're paying for the service, obviously, you don't necessarily need to go out and buy a drill press, you know, on your first pedal, because you can get that stuff already done, you know, so, and the painting as well.
I find the drilling's probably the thing that I've butchered the most going into it. I just off center, you know, what I think is a straight line ends up being, you know, enough out that it just looks wrong, you know, like that's been my challenge. I'm not really a power tools kind of guy. I've used them in the past, but not for a long time. So my IT hands aren't as competent with the tools as I'd like. But yeah, that's the thing. That's the one thing now that I make sure of before I do anything is, are all these holes in the right place, you know, before I actually go to drill it. So that's that was an overlooked part of it for me, I think. And also making sure if you're using a particular type of you know, control or knob on the top, that it actually fits with where you drill the rest of the holes. I made that mistake as well, so I probably wasted $50 or $60 worth of cases in the first couple of weeks. It was painful. Or enclosures, sorry. Yeah, it was painful stuff.
My first pedal was a NPM booster, just a single transistor booster, and I'd planned to have a battery in it. And this circuit was so small, and I was amazed that I somehow managed to just the orientation where all the parts, you know, where, you know, the jacks and the knobs and the DC jack and the stop switch. I just couldn't fit a battery in there, no matter which way I tried to get in there. I don't think I even put much thought into where I was actually drilling, you know, until later, and you're like, that's why you need to pay attention where the holes are going.
I've got a pretty cool template that I found online, and I've sort of modified it a little bit just for the parts that I've got. The first time I put the LED light way too close to the jack. So not only was it really hard to just fit them both together, it was I had to cut the plastic washer around with scissors to get the actual, anyway, it was a mess. I had them just way too close to each other, and the the washer, like the nut or the bolt, was right next to the LED, like right next to it. There was no gap. It was super tight. So yeah, I think the template I'm using now is pretty cool. It's just modified one slightly.
Templates help immensely, even if it's not what you like. If you're building a pedal that's got four knobs on it, mm-hmm. and you're and yours has got five or whatever, you just use, like, if you're putting it inside a 1590B enclosure, it's pretty standard size enclosure that you get with commercial pedals. If you're putting inside that, you can just use a template for 1590B and then, you know, like, put your put an extra knob on, pretty much. But you use that for the base, where you're drilling and everything.
Cool. In your opinion, what are some of the benefits to learning how to build your own pedals?
Well, the obvious one is I've got about 100 pedals right next to me in this cupboard.
Yeah.
I suppose that's a big one. That is a reason why a lot of people, start building their own pedals, because as you probably found out yourself, when you start to build them, and you start to see actually what parts are used to build pedals, it's like a $300 delay that's got a $2 delay chip inside it, like a commercial pedal that costs $300.
Yeah.
Got a PC2399, which is a $2 chip, mm-hmm. That's an extreme example, but generally you find that the parts are quite cheap. I don't advocate actually building pedals to save money though, because also what you might be finding is that, like, when you come to any, particularly at the beginning of a new hobby, you need tools, and you got to pay for the tools, mm-hmm. and that can be a bit of an initial setup cost. Down the track, you'll end up being able to build pedals that will be cheap, that you'd actually, you would have spent a lot more to actually to buy a commercial unit. And also, going on to another benefit is that you can service it as well. So if it breaks, you can fix it as well. Which surprisingly, I remember when I first started building pedals, I was thinking to myself, like, particularly because my soldering was really bad, and wiring was really bad.
Yeah.
You're learning all that initial stuff. I was thinking to myself, there's no way, like my first pedal, the MPM booster that I mentioned, I thought there's no way this thing's going to last longer than a month. Like, it's just, the wiring and the way I've built it and all the mistakes I made. And I actually did a video on the YouTube channel saying, I think it was called Revisiting My First Pedal or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't turned the thing on for about 3 or 4 years, at least 3 or 4 years, and I'd built it about 5 years earlier. And I in the video I said, let's just turn this thing on, see if it actually works, plugged it in, and hey presto,
yeah, great.
It worked. Yeah.
Nice.
But if it didn't work, I could fix it as well. I could repair it. And obviously, once you get a lot of knowledge for how pedals are built, you can buy broken pedals on eBay and fix them as well.
Yep.
A lot of people do that. A lot of do-it-yourselfers do that. They I saw one on eBay actually recently for a Phase 45. I think it went for $30.
Hmm.
Which they go for about 100 new or something like that.
Yeah.
And he said that the three pole double throw switch on it was broken. I mean even you could probably work out now. I mean, you've only built a couple of pedals.
I've done four. Yeah, I'm up to four now. So I've done the fuzz. I've done my second dirt and boosters on the way. And a mate of mine wants one of those, so I said I build him one and I sprayed it. It looks pretty sweet. And
cool.
The night drive, which, man, that thing rocks. It totally rocks. It's like one of the best overdrives I've used. And it was great. I put it together in like under a day. For me, that's a lot quicker than my first attempt. So, it's...
Did you mod it or did you just set it up as standard?
I just set it up stock. Yeah, it's all the same. So, but I guess when you say mod it, do you mean like just change a value on the drive pot or something, or?
Oh, the sky's the limit. Okay. I mean, like you can change the pot value so you get more gain out of it. That's a very common one people do with op amp distortion or overdrive pedals. They can increase the value on the pot to get more gain out of it. You can change the clip. Like, these are all very simple mods, but they're ones that are commonly done. You can change the clipping. You know, you can pull it. You pull it if you just, like, I don't know if you remember, but there was three diodes in the, that you soldered in, probably. You would have put the three in.
Yes, yep.
Yeah, if you leave one out, you get less. You get less clipping, so it's a little bit less distorted, but you get more volume. So if you want to use it to, you know, like if you want a louder but less distorted pedal, then you just take a diode out. I mean, you know, I mean, how hard is that to do?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I'm using the little and I've forgotten the term for them. Those little plugs. What are they called?
Sockets.
Yeah, I'm using the sockets now. Yeah, all the time. So yeah, they're really cool.
That's pretty much, I still do it, you know, like I know it's a sign of a pro when you don't use sockets, you know, and you just solder everything in because you're committing to the to a layout. You know, it looks impressive when you see someone build a complicated pedal and they don't use sockets, particularly on chips.
Yep.
Because chips are a bit of a pain to get back out again.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you see that and you sort of think, oh, wow, this guy knows, you know, he knows what he's doing. And I could do that, but I still use the sockets as well because it just helps you, like, Some pedals that I've built, I've found that a particular IC just sounds so much better than the one that's actually stock, you know.
Yeah, cool.
And I think the Night Drive was the, the Night Drive's the one that I use, the LM1456, which I don't think is the standard. I don't think it's the stock. I can't remember.
Hmm.
But, yeah, that's an example. It just sounds like a totally different pedal. And all you got to do is just stick a socket in instead of the IC. You just pull it out and stick another IC in. That's another mod, very simple. So this actually relates to the question that you asked, some of the benefits. You can mod the hell out of them.
Yeah,
you know, you can change things the way you want to.
And I guess these mods are inexpensive as well, you know, on the most part.
Yeah, well, you're talking like a 20 cent chip, you know, like you buy another chip, you know, like a... It's for people that aren't sort of up to speed with electronics, just, you know, the eight-legged chip, got eight silver legs on it and a black box. That's the chip that I'm talking about here, just in case your listeners don't know what I'm going on about.
Yeah, I'll put a photo up for them if you're watching on YouTube, so yeah.
Yeah, so the dip chip is what it's called. I mean, you know, it varies obviously depending on which one you buy, but, you know, 10 cents, 20 cents, 50 cents, whatever, and then you can just swap them around and, you know, and see which one you like. And you end up with something that's customized as well, which is another big benefit of building your own guitar pedals. You end up with something different that no one else has got, you know.
When I first started looking into pedals, I thought the Vero board thing was the way to go. So I went and I bought like four or five full-blown kits that just did my head in as a beginner. I it looked easy enough when I was looking at it on the web, but when I actually went to put them together, your knowledge has to be a little more advanced, I think, before you even tackle something like that, as compared to how easy, you know, your kits were in comparison. That, what are your thoughts on either starting with Vero board with no electronics background, or just your thoughts on it in general, and you, I guess, a comparison between the two?
That NPM booster that I've mentioned twice, I'm going to mention again, because that's actually the first and only Vero layout that I've done.
Yeah.
Because I found... I mean, I could do it, you know, in all honesty, I could do it now much easier than when I first started. But, and some people build the most complicated stuff on Vero. You should see, it's like a work of art, you know. I just look at them and think to myself, you know, like, imagine the mental logistics, mental gymnastics you'd have to go through to get that, you know, to get it all on Vero. It's quick as well, you know, it's quick. You just get the board, you stuff the parts in, you know, you don't have to worry about getting another board. But it is, and I've had people disagree with me. I've said this in another video, and I had a whole bunch of people disagree with me, but I'm sticking to my guns.
Yeah.
It is not a good beginner choice. It really isn't. It's, as I said before, it's mental gymnastics. You've got enough to worry about when you first come to building guitar pedals without taking on following a circuit and, you know, like assembling a circuit from scratch. A fabricated board, it's all printed on the top. It tells you where everything needs to go. You just plug it in, solder it, you're done.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's so much room for error with a Vero build.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I was saying, with the one that I tried, I also find, not only are they sort of a little too, what's the word? It was visually a lot harder to follow for me trying to drill the different bits out and all the links and all that kind of stuff as well. There wasn't enough information that I found to explain that part of the process as well. It was more like they assume you've already done a lot of electronics, which might be perfect for some people, but for a guy like me, it was so much easier being able to see which way, you know, the components actually sit on the board and what does what as well along the way.
It's funny you said they assume that that you have background electronics knowledge. They assume that you've done it before, because I was going to say, I reckon with Vero, it's kind of the assumption that you have some electronics background, you know, that you know. That's why I don't think it's a good idea for beginners, mm-hmm. For that reason, because like with the pots as well, you know, like the pots, like for the volume control, there's only one wire coming off it. Sometimes there's only one wire and you're like, I can only be one wire. Where is it going? But see, I know, because I've built so many pedals now, I know that the volume pot is often the output, you know, and the output goes off the middle lug. And I think the other wire might go to ground on the Vero, build. I don't build much Vero, but you'd have to have it going to ground. So, yeah, what do you use lug two on the volume pot for? You know, it's assumed you know those things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you have to worry about any of that stuff with a fabricated board or even an etch board. If you etch your own copper boards yourself, it's not that hard to do. Mm-hmm. These days it's so easy. You don't need a, like back in the old days, when I used to do a bit of electronics at TAFE, we had to use UV bed, you know, like they got UV lights and you put this spray on it.
Yeah.
It's a complicated process. But these days all you need is a laser jet printer and some acid, which you can just get from JCar or your electronics shop. That's it.
Yeah.
And hot water. That's it.
I watched your series on etching, or one of the videos on etching your own board and all that kind of stuff. And it was interesting. That I think that series puts in perspective how much work goes into the whole process if you're starting without your own PCB as well. Like for me, I don't have a lot of space for a lot of that kind of stuff where I live. So if I can just bypass etching my own boards, I mean, that's really cool and it's a great thing to do. But for a good, you know, everyone's in a different situation. If I, you know, where I am right now, it's just easier just to order the parts, know that they're going to, you know, the board's going to work and I don't have to go through the huge learning curve and or trial and errors with another thing, because I already taken into account I'm using tools again, you know, for the first time in a long time. I'm soldering. It's all new, you know. So I did a couple of a few things at a time without sort of doing my head in was a good approach for me. And, you know, there was a few days there where I almost had enough and then I took a break, came back and, you know, got a few things working. So, yeah, it's definitely a good feeling to get things, you know, not to overburden yourself in the beginning with lots of stuff. The entire process. Yeah,
you can select what parts of the process you want to do. Like I was saying, the whole etching thing. I mean, you don't have to do that to start off with. And I wouldn't recommend even doing that to start. I did when I first started, but I mean, like I said, I got a little bit of electronics background. I'm not some electronics genius or anything. I mean, I did it for like 6 months in TAFE.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't that much. It helped me a little bit step forward, but not, I mean, these days on the internet, you could learn what I learned at TAFE, you know, in just, you know, a week, just watching videos and reading.
Stuff,
you know. Yeah. Cool, cool. But I mean, you don't have to do any of those parts of the process that you don't want to. So, you know, like you don't have to, like we were saying before, you don't have to drill the enclosure. You don't have to even paint it. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to etch your own board. You don't even have to source your own parts with some of these kits. You can get them with the parts already included.
Yep.
You know, so and then when you finished your first pedal or you know, starting to get a feel for how it all sort of works, you go, well, I'm not going to pay for the service of having the parts included. I'll source them myself and I'll save a few bucks and you can do that yourself, because you want to learn more. Obviously everyone wants to learn more and get better at what they do.
Yep.
And then you can get to the point that, I mean, my most unexpected or extravagant skill that I've learned from building pedals is powder coating. You know, like I found I was using enamel paints and enamel paints just take so long to dry, and I just I'm pretty impatient. Yeah, I just can't yeah. I can't wait 5 days for it to cure. You know, it was kind of driving me crazy. So I looked into the powder coating thing, and the setup for the powder coating probably would have cost me about, I reckon, including the powders, probably about $300. So yeah. It wasn't cheap. But I would have made that back already for the amount that I've actually powder coated with it, because the actual powder costs nothing. You can buy like a kilo of powder that you could cover. I reckon you could probably do maybe 50 to 100 petals, at least 50 to 100 petals with a kilo. It goes a really long way, depending on how thick it's on.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, and if you're paying for that, like you're paying for pre-powder coated enclosures, they cost you probably maybe $3 or $4 extra. Hmm. You can see, like, you know, like it's 100 petals, you know, but once you've done that, you've pretty much got it in, you know, like everything after that is a bonus. But I just like to control the process as well, you know, not just the money saving part. Just come up with my own color and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You could mix. Is it true that the powder doesn't actually stick, or you can wash it off your hands or whatever? Or if say you get it on your skin,
it's just powder. Okay. Yeah, it's like dust.
Yeah.
It's really, but yeah, the biggest, like, sorry, I got a bit off track there, but the biggest thing, the biggest benefit with the powder is that it actually, once it comes out of the oven and it cools off, it's done. You just assemble the petal. It's done. It's like rock hard.
Yeah. That's the benefit over the paint. It took me a while to find, well, I say a while, it's taken me a few weeks to work out the best paint for the enclosures that I have after I prime it as well. And also I found a really good clear coat, which some clear coats suck. This is the second or third one that I've tried. No, third one that I've tried, I think, which actually dries really quickly. Like within a few hours, I've had my other clear coat took days and days and days to really to feel like it was ready. You know, it just and I don't have anything to. I know some people say I go buy a toaster oven or whatever and put it in there, but I don't know. Have you had any experience trying to heat them up or anything like that? Or
yeah. What just before I talk about that, like, what brand was it that you're talking about?
It's a Dulux.
Oh, Dulux.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I've got it in my cupboard up here. I'll shoot you a message with the actual the picture of it or something. It's really good.
Yeah. I used to use I don't know. I don't think it was. I think it took a while for this one to dry, but it was I think it was White Knight.
Mm-hmm.
Squirt. Yeah. That clear White Knight squirt. Yeah. That was pretty good. But it didn't. It wasn't a couple of hours though. It was at least a day.
Yeah. Okay.
To dry.
I mean, it doesn't. Yeah, some of my other clear coats that I've tried stayed really tacky for a long time. I made the mistake of thinking it was fine, picked it up, and my thumbprints were left on the sides. So these are mistakes I think you don't make more than once or twice before you go, okay, I'm just gonna exercise some patience and let it go.
I got a bit of a funny story actually about enamel paint. The last paint, it's actually the last pedal that I built. I sprayed it and I was saying to my wife, I was going, oh, this one's perfect, like it was all even, there was no dripping, it was perfect, and I put it outside in the sun for it to dry, and I came out about an hour later and a massive moth had just like kamikaze the enclosure, and I took it inside. I've gone to try my wife, I've gone, that's it. I'm getting the powder coating gun. I've had it. it was like it sacrificed its life to destroy this metal.
I think it must have been a sign. It was definitely a sign Yeah, I can see how that happens. I mean, I obviously spray outside, and I've got a little booth. I call it a booth, but it's not really a booth. A little area that I can spray in that I made. And, you know, it just picks that you can get dust on it. Cars are coming back and forth out of the driveway or whatever, it's pretty frustrating.
Because it's such a long dry time as well, you know, you've got to be really careful with it. And I mean, look, even with the powder coating, it never ends up perfect, but it is definitely better than anything I've done with enamel. I can tell you that. You know, the big benefit is once you set up, it just costs you nothing to do the enclosure, you know, to paint the enclosure. Whereas paints, I don't know if you found already, but I was going through paints like there's no tomorrow. The rattle cans.
Yeah.
I had like, because also you got sort of, you know, like you're sort of stuck with one color for a while, and then you want to get a different color, and you end up just buying a different can for every petal.
Yeah, I've got 6 or 7 of them now, and I'm like, I haven't even used the sky blue one that I was planning on using. My in thing right now is this sort of metallic charcoal white night paint. It looks really sweet, and
that looks cool.
It actually sort of bonds to the paint doesn't ever look runny compared to some other sprays. I've noticed it might be technique related, but I've never had a problem spraying with this particular paint. I actually used it on the panels of my car the other day just to see what would happen. I was like, I touched up some of the plastic and it's so even. This particular white night paint is just really, really even looking as opposed to some of the solid colours.
Yeah, I had different results when I was using enamels. There was one that was like a sparkly color. I think it's called a metallic finish, but it was pretty much clear coat with a heap of sparkles in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you put it on, like you'd have to put it on really thick because it's basically just, you know, like you're just applying like glitter with clear coat.
Yeah, yeah.
But when it would dry really hard, and cool. And it would be really, really difficult to chip. So yeah, I mean, there's better paints than other ones. Like this, the normal enamel Dulux paints I found weren't that good. They took forever to dry, and you know, you'd end up, like you said, you'd end up, you know, or you put the three pole double throw on too early, and it's, you know, and it leaves an indent in the paint and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, made those mistakes quite a few times as well.
Yeah, toaster oven will help though.
Yeah,
like you asked before, it will help.
Yeah.
I got my toaster oven for powder coating from Kmart. I think it was about $30. It's like a cheap one.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Cool. Cool. Yeah. What are you going to do with that now that you're turning into the powder coat king? You might be able to just save some space and throw the guy out, or because you couldn't use.
Oh no, you need it.
Oh,
sorry,
really?
I just. Email.
That's right.
You need it for powder coating because you've got to actually heat the powder up to like 200. Depending on the powder, between 150 and 200 degrees.
Oh wow! Okay, I didn't realize that. I haven't really looked into the whole process of it. I've seen it being applied before, but I didn't realize you had to actually heat it up as well.
It's basically like plastic dust,
mm-hmm.
and it statically sticks to the outside of the enclosure. And then you put it in the oven and it melts the powder and it sort of forms in one sort of layer on the petal.
Oh.
So it's basically plastic. That's why it dries so quickly when you take it out. It's, you know, like it's hot to touch for about 15 minutes and then it's rock hard.
Yeah, wow. I wondered how it was. Yeah, I always wondered how it was so even on a lot of the petals that, you know, that I've come across over these, how they get it so, I guess, flat or even. Yeah, okay, that makes sense because, I didn't realize that was part of the process. And yours look great. I saw you posted a photo. You said it took like an hour and 47 minutes to do, I don't know, was it 10 or something?
Six or eight.
Six or eight, yeah. And they look like a million bucks. Like, they're nice and shiny.
Yeah. They're not perfect, like, because it's a garage job. You have to expect, you know, like what the best that you can do in a garage kind of situation. It's not a sterile sort of environment because it's the same problem with enamel paints. You have to watch for dust and things like that and hairs and all that sort of stuff sticking to it because they will come out and they'll leave, you know, imperfections on the surface. It won't be perfectly flat. And orange peel and all that sort of stuff. You have a new set of problems that you kind of have to deal with. But it's by far a better option for batch coating as well. If you just want to do like 10 of the same color, you can do it really fast because the powder's already in the gun. You just do one, chuck it in the oven, get the next one going, do that one, chuck it in the oven. You know, like you just get a
cool
going. But the results that I've got with powder coating, even my worst results with powder coating, are still better than some of my better results with rattle cans.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about where people can find you online. Just you can point people to your website or is it Chromesphere? Is that how you pronounce your YouTube channel?
Chromesphere.com. That's actually a throwback to another website I used to have. It was a 3D, like a 3D. I had a little bit of an interest in 3D rendering and 3D, making 3D models and things like that. And I had a website called chromesphere.com. Mm-hmm. That's actually that website, but it has absolutely nothing to do with pedals, so don't go there.
Yeah, I wondered where you came up with that name. I was like, what does that mean? Yeah.
Chromesphere, because the first model, like when you do 3D rendering, the first picture that you usually do is just, like everyone does, it's just a chrome sphere. The first thing everyone does is a chrome sphere. So yeah, that's where that came from. I was going to have that channel. This is years ago, like 8 years ago plus, before I got into pedal building, before I became obsessed with pedal building. It was going to be, that channel is actually going to be related to 3D, 3D rendering and stuff like that. But yeah, that's where that name comes from. It doesn't have anything to do with pedals, but yeah, that is the name. It's chromesphere.com.
Chromesphere.com. All right, cool. Anyone watching on YouTube, I'll put a little annotation on this section of the podcast, and they can be fired over to your website. Make sure you subscribe. Paul has loads and loads of great DIY tutorials. I think I've watched about 80 or 90% of them now, and you've got always more content coming up. I think all of my problems and questions are a good inspiration for new help tutorial videos too, Paul. I'm stuck again, mate. What do I do?
Having people ask me those questions is good for like what you said, because I find a lot of the same sort of questions come through. People have the same problems, so that's where a lot of the inspiration for the videos come from. Because I keep getting the same question. I'm like, I got to do a video on this because it can just help everybody in one hit. And
I totally get it. I do the same things occasionally. If I'm one of the first to demo something on YouTube or whatever, I'll just do a frequently asked questions video every few months on it, and then however long between videos. But basically, it just covers everything, and I can just say, here, check out this. All the, it's a lot easier that way as well.
Yeah,
it's a lot more time efficient, and people get a lot of value out of it as well. It's good that you have that interaction with people as well. You can take what you're getting asked and turn it into something that will help everybody, so it's great.
Yeah, well, there's no point making content about things that people don't want to see or questions that people have, obviously not as much of and frequently asked stuff.
Yeah, I'm definitely also looking forward to hearing more of your pedals. Now, let me try that again. Sorry. I said pedal demos, I was trying to say. Sorry about that. I'll cut that.
That's all right.
So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing some more of your pedals demoed on YouTube at some point as well. I know you've been doing a few of those again lately, and they're all really great, man. They sound good, and yeah, good job on sort of covering a lot of ground there.
Yeah, I used to do a lot of them, but I've kind of been distracted with the web store and, like my own stuff. But I wanted to get back into that actually, because I've also get sort of offers from people on the on the forum saying, I've got a PCB. Do you want to build a pedal and then do a sound demo of it? Because obviously it helps them to, to promote their their stores and things like that. So, I mean, I try and keep the channel of a hub, not just my own stuff, so that people can, can send me things and I'll demo for them as well. So, and I know it's appreciated because, they sort of say, oh, thanks for that. They put the videos and sound demos and stuff on their site so that people can see what the actual pedal sounds like before you buy it. Because, a highly modded do-it-yourself pedal might not sound the same as a commercial pedal that's based on, often doesn't, so it's good to actually be able to hear what it's going to sound like before you actually undertake the project.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a huge help for, you wouldn't want to build things that you're not interested in anyway. And if you can definitely hear things, I think that's why I think my channel does relatively well, because anytime someone wants to find out how a pedal sounds or whatever, they go to YouTube, and even if it's a DIY job, you want to sort of know how, what you're going to get out of it once you put all the time and learning into it. So yeah, it's a really cool resource. I mean, I can't foresee YouTube ever declining in terms of you know, great content. You look at it from where it is now compared to the early days. I think I got on there around 2006. It's just, it's changed so much, and there's just so much. You can learn anything on there now. It's
yeah.
Just, it's insane. The
internet's great. I tell you, I got a do-it-yourself beer kit from my my wife for Christmas. Perfect Christmas present, if you ask me.
Yeah.
And within like probably about 3 or 4 weeks of doing a bit of research, I was brewing beer and it tastes beautiful. You know, I mean,
yeah, wow.
If that was 5, 10 years ago, you'd be, you know, like I've got it temperature controlled in a fridge, you know, and I'm doing all the right things, using the right yeast and all that sort of stuff. If this was 10 years ago, you would be, you know, brewing it in a shed that's like 40 degrees, you know, and it tastes horrible.
Yeah.
You get all the right information and you get it fast. It's unbelievable, you know, like as far as the do-it-yourself world goes, there's an answer for everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of good websites for DIY pedals as well that I've found. And some of the forums are useful as well, but yeah, the one thing I've learned is just keep it simple when you get into it. And yeah, and I can highly recommend everybody check out Paul's website as well. So what's your .com again? DIY?
DIYguitarpedals.com.au.
Cool. Yep.
Yeah.
And yeah, I appreciate all your help with me getting my first one to work as well. And even though it was supposed to take 10 minutes, I think that was for guys that know what they're doing. For me, it was like about 65 minutes just to get everything, make sure I had it all right. But the second one I did in under 10. So it was good.
That 10 minutes goes back to a video that I did a while ago where I wanted the video to be less than 10 minutes. So that kind of stuck with the project.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's called, you know, like 10-minute dirt and boost, but doesn't the clock's not 10. You don't have to finish in 10 minutes.
Yeah. No, it definitely gets easier as you go. So anyone who's new to pedal building like I am, I can say that once you've done one once, the second one is much easier. It's just much easier.
And the big reward is you can build, once you get good at this, you can build anything. You can build small stones, you can build BBD delays, you can build the most flanges, you know, you can build anything pretty much analog. Digital's a bit of a different story, but pretty well anything analog, which is still makes up a lot of the, you know, like a lot of, like 90% of pedals these days are still analog because, you know, we like analog.
Yeah.
It sounds
cool. One last question I have for you. I just thought of this as we were chatting. What's one of the more complicated projects for DIY? Like, is there a particular type of effect that's much, much harder to make than, say, like a boost pedal?
Boost is obviously the easiest. So that's a good one to start with. And like that 7-minute fuzz pedal I've got, that's an easy one as well, and the overdrive, the dirt pedal as well, they're easy ones. Up the other end of the scale, you're looking at phases. The more stages, the harder it is.
Yep.
Generally, because it involves more circuitry. Some of my nightmare builds is probably a good place to avoid. The ones that I've had trouble with, I built a Maestro filter sample hold.
Mm-hmm.
That was a killer. Because the road hadn't actually been paved properly when I started that one, and I was actually trying to work out. I actually solved a couple of problems. It left a path of destruction. Everyone that tried it couldn't get it working, and then I started doing it, and I found there's a couple of things that were causing the effect not to work, and I actually just pretty much stumbled upon the answer. So that was a complicated pedal that hadn't been proven to work properly. So that was, you know, so any pedal that hasn't been verified is the word you want. Any pedal that hasn't been verified, don't take on as a first project, of course. You want to make sure it's verified.
Yeah.
Just like BBD stuff is really complicated. You want to sort of avoid that sort of stuff. That's up there with the hardest stuff I've built in the past.
Yeah, wow.
So generally when you're looking at modulation and delay, that they are generally harder than things like basic distortions, basic overdrives, boosts. That's the simplest stuff. There's exceptions, of course, but generally that's how it works.
I saw one fuzz pedal you put together just with it had maybe, what, 3 or 4 parts, and one of the comments on the video was like, oh my god, this sounds amazing, or whatever. They were like totally blown away that it had like, yeah, I can't remember how many parts it had, but it must have been under five, maybe, was it? Or
yeah, that's what that 7 minute fuzz is based on. Yeah. That video, that's where it's come from.
Oh, okay, cool.
It's five parts. It's so easy to put together. It's ridiculous. That's why it's such a good beginner project, because you're not increasing the risk of a build that's not going to work by taking on something, yeah, because there's barely any parts. You don't, when you start, your soldering is generally pretty poor,
yeah,
and soldering is like a massive area for failed builds. So it's good to have something small so you don't have to do a lot of soldering,
yeah,
to start straight up.
Cool
yeah.
Awesome. So thanks for your time today, Paul. I really appreciate you having a chat, yeah, to me and everyone else who listens to the podcast and also on iTunes as well. So feel free, just one more time, tell everybody where they can find you on YouTube or online.
Websites, www.doitselfguitarpedals.com.au, and the channel is, the YouTube channel is ChromeSphere.com.
Cool. And anyone watching on YouTube, there'll be annotations. People can get there nice and quick and subscribe. So it's been a pleasure chatting to you, and thanks again for all your help, mate. I absolutely appreciate it.
No worries. Do it again sometime and get the video going. I might be able to show some examples of builds and things like that.
Hey, that'd be great. Cool.
Yeah.
Cheers. Thanks.
No worries. Thanks, Shane.
Thanks for listening to this installment of the In the Blues Tone podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, I appreciate it. So thank you so much for stopping by. And if you also want to download the full podcast, head over to guitarpedaldemos.com. It's my website where I post my podcasts. And you can also subscribe via iTunes as well. All the links and all the information for subscribing to the podcast will be in the description. And I hope that was informative for people thinking about how to start with DIY pedals and electronics in general. So thanks again, and I'll speak to you all very, very soon. See ya.